Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Sunday afternoon. Tonight is Bedikas Chametz. And I want to say a few words to follow up on what I was thinking about before. This is the way my attention, my mind is going this year. I'm doing this L'chabad Mishpachas Stefanski, our best friend of this podcast. They're in Eretz Yisrael now. I think the whole family. And thank you. I was just preoccupied with this whole inyan of what was the state of the Jewish slaves at the time of Pesach in terms of their ideology, their hashkafa, their theology, and all the rest of it, considering their background. I'm aware, just like you are, the whole story of Pesach with the miracles and all that business. I get it. But how was that interpreted and how was it absorbed by the Jews? As I pointed out last night in Ezekiel 20, Cheskel Perikhof, there's a whole thing. They didn't get rid of their idols and all that stuff, and Hashem said I wanted to wipe them out, except I was afraid it would make a chil hashmi, you know. Goyim would say I was not able to take them out of Egypt, and so on and so forth. There is that side. And so where are things holding? Now, what led me to think about this is, as I mentioned, these new translation of Barbanel Haggadah, and again, I have to thank Chaim Yehuda Meir for getting it for me, and actually, as a result of this Pesach, I've been looking at things I never really look at, you know, like this Barbanel Haggadah, I mean, in great, the English one, and now I'm checking out for the first time the article Ramban, because I see there are a couple of interesting, unusual Rambans, on the Chumash, I mean. I don't have the set, but you know, I borrowed from somebody. And this is not bad notes, I would say. It's not great, but it's not bad notes. But anyway, what I'm talking about is that the Abraham has a whole country that I think I talked about last year on the Brit Shemayim Misraim, which is a very interesting concept. Whatever his specific interpretation of Brit Shemayim Misraim, the very notion of a Brit Shemayim Misraim taking place 400 years approximately before the Yetzias Mitzrayim is actually a very significant business in the context of the Jews having their own narrative. As I mentioned yesterday, you know, how did the Jews understand their own slavery after 86 years of hard labor? That's a couple generations. It seems to be that the Avonim, the slaves, understood themselves to be in a superior power called Egypt. And understandably so, you know, the way they're being tortured, Avodas Perach, and all the rest of it, right? Again, they had some notion, I'm going by traditional concepts, they had some notion of Pakod Pakadati Yisrael, and one day there'll be something better, but, you know, it's pie in the sky. Me and my father, my grandfather, great-grandfather, however long it was, were all working to death. It was really rough. So, how do we interpret our slavery in Egypt? As I pointed out yesterday, you say, well, the gods of Egypt are crushing you. How did they understand, by the time you get to our story of Pesach, the enslavement of the Hebrews? I don't imagine it was done through such a context. They were in somebody else's land, Egypt. The local gods didn't like them for one reason or another. Maybe the local gods didn't. I'm trying to imagine myself Chayavon Lirs Asim Ki Yatsim Mitzrayim. Well, Chayavon Lirs Asim Ki Lohayevim Mitzrayim. I'm trying to understand. How would they have assimilated all this reality? I would imagine that they would say, listen, we came to somebody else's land. The local gods are angry because we're not worshiping their religion and stuff like that. And our punishment is that we were enslaved and tortured. It's like a certain logical conclusion. And what did they know of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov? I mean, they knew they're descended from him. That's pretty clear because Moshe Rabbeinu introduced himself in that context. But how much more than that did they know? Did they know about the Mechiras Yosef, for example, and all the details that we do? Did they know about the rape of Dinah by Shechem? In other words, did they know the stories of the book of Genesis, of Bereishis? The Maaseh Bereishis, the Vayechulu, the whole nine yards. What you and I take for granted, we can't take for granted at that time. We've grown up with something called Chumash as a basic staple, and that provides a narrative, the Jewish narrative. A chosen people, the three patriarchs, the four matriarchs, Adam and Eve story. I mean, I get it. But they didn't have the Chumash didn't exist at that time. And so, how are they supposed to negotiate mentally the terrible matzav in which they're in? Think about that. So aside from the fact you had avodas perech in the physical sense, you also had a certain avdus and a kind of avodas perech or crushing notions in the mental context. I mean, how did they walk around all day long and understand themselves? How do classes of slaves in different countries, different culture, interpret themselves throughout history, internationally? It's a fair question. Right? It's a fair question. And so, it seems to me that, as I mentioned the other day, when there's a Yetzias Mitzrayim, it has two elements, both of which are very important. One is a physical element. One's an intellectual one. I hate to use the word spiritual, so it's an overplayed word. But the intellectual development, I'm trying to be real over here. And indeed, like I said the other day, we have two versions of the Haggadah. One simply focuses on the external physical emancipation. Avoni money and fire mitzvah yisim mishom chazog wazron atuya, and so forth. The other one is mitchilo of the vadezorah v'seinu. So that's one in which we switch, we gained a new identity, you see? Although it seems over there that Yehoshua has to explain that, right? We go back to Terach and they're in the Avram and all the rest. I mean, to you and I, it sounds sort of repetitive. Obviously, if Yeshua is telling it to them, as a Navi, that was information that they had to have. And they weren't so clear, it sounds to me, in the time of Joshua. What was their precise relationship to Israel? Why are we going in? It's a little bit like now, the Gaza war. And, you know, the left-wing Jews are saying, what right do we have to Israel? And things like that. So you have that over here also. And you have to explain, no, this was promised to Avram. And there was Esau, and Esau went to Har Seir, and Yaakov went to Mitzrayim. Meaning, it's part of a divine plan. You see? But that's a brand new and entirely different narrative. It's the narrative of the state of Israel today, even though the non-from don't want to accept it. And that's in the end of the day, it's going to be the only justification. So here's where I'm coming from. At the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, as I mentioned yesterday, it says, V'chol Elohei Mitzrayim Eseh Shvotim. And I told you, how would the Rambam learn? How would someone, the others learn it? The Ramban and all these other people I told you the other day, they all say there are other kochas out there. God runs them all. He created them all, but there are kochas out there. Look at the Ramban in 12:12 in Shmos. You know, Sari Mala. B'cholahim Mitzrayim, there's a Sar Shel Mitzrayim and a Sar Shel this. There's mamash heavenly stuff happening. Right? And there are others like that also, the Barbanel. On the other hand, if you're an Ein Od Melvado person, like Maimonides, so you have to, you know, you're bothered by Chol Hei Mitzrayim, they go for a basic rationalist interpretation. Elohim doesn't mean gods. The Rivash says Elohim means the elite. Me, myself, and I think Elohim means the judges. Wouldn't that be the best interpretation? You know, Elohim lo skalel is a basic, right? So the Egyptian judicial system obviously justified and enforced the slavery system that was imposed upon the Hebrews. It was legal, wasn't it? And so, I mean, it was wrong, but it was legal. And so if he says, Elchol Elohei Shvatim, Eseh Shvatim, I think that's like a great line, because I will bring Mishpat on the judges of Egypt. That's my favorite. Somebody must say it, but I don't know. That's what I thought. Elchol Elohei Mitzrayim, I will punish the judges. No, I'll bring the judges to Mishpat. So in other words, that would imply that the Bechor, the firstborn, died, and whatever, and the judges died. Judges who were enforcing the slave system. I don't know. That's what I think. But anyway, let that be. But the mental status quo, which was accepted, or what's the right word, absorbed by the Hebrews, was the narrative of Egypt. That the gods of Egypt, you know, imposed the slavery on the Jews, that the Jews therefore deserved it by taking off the gods in some fashion or another. This is part of the natural order. This is what the heavenly forces, the gods, have, you know, decreed. It's like any other tragedy in life. It's a decree of the gods. And that's how you have to live with it. And now comes a different narrative. Well, what was the narrative exactly? Hashem said, I'm going to liberate you out of Egypt, and he does. And he slays the firstborn and all the rest of that stuff. But still, the Avodim, the Hebrews, are confused. In other words, what's going on over here? Do we have the right to run away, for example? And, you know, are they going to chase after us and so forth? And things of that nature. So in other words, they see the God of Moshe is, and their ancestral God is, very powerful. But that you know, overturn everything else. And what's fascinating to me is that Moshe has a counter-narrative, but it is historical. And for whatever reason, I don't know exactly, this counter-narrative is not communicated to the Israelites until 7 weeks after they left Egypt. Actually, a little more. What do I mean? What is the counter-narrative? It's the Bris Ben Abzar. You want to know why you're in Egypt? This was decreed long ago in Avram. Whether it's because he said, Bamoy Deki Oshena, or for this reason, that reason, like I say, the Abarbanel is a long contrast. Woo! On this whole thing, he says it's a Mechiras Yosef, more or less. Whatever your case is, it ain't got nothing to do with Egypt. You get what I'm saying? Has to do with you. Has to do with your own fault and God punishing you for your own sins or something like that. And it's not even clear it had to be Egypt. Yeah, maybe, yeah, maybe no. It says, Giger Yazarchob Beres Lohem Vavodim Vinim Osamar B'mei Shonan. All it says, Beres Lohem. Maybe, you know, it was supposed to be Mitzrayim, maybe not. It's not even the point. What I'm doing over here is not because of Pharaoh or anything like this. It was foretold to Abraham centuries ago. And had to do with the Avraham Avinu story. And it had to do with the price Avram has to pay to get Eretz Yisrael, or something like that. How you interpret the Bris Ben Abzar is obviously a very complicated business. But one thing is clear. Dor Ravi Yeshuvahenu. In other words, that is the foretelling for everything that happened. So look what I just did to you. I took away your existing narrative and replaced it with another narrative. I changed your sense of identity. I radically transformed it. And now you're looking at through the world and all of reality through very different glasses than you did before. It's like I would go to somebody and say like this, you think you're so-and-so's children? Actually, you're adopted, you're Plony and Plony's children. And from this and this background, all the rest of it. And let's say it was true. I would give you a total mental earthquake. Because your entire sense of reality and self-identity has now been shattered and transformed and replaced with a different one that you weren't even aware of. Which has to make you look at things from a different angle. Remember a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was, the head of the Nazi party, I think I'm right, in Hungary, found that he's Jewish. Now I think he's Lubavitcher. I'm not kidding, right? That was like a transformative experience when he found that he himself was Jewish. And it rocked him, and he flipped. Now, by the way, I happen to remember in Hungary, in the late 30s, maybe early 40s, what the heck was the guy's name? There was a guy who was a Hungarian prime minister or something like that, and he passed a law as a big anti-Semite, you know, heck with the Jews, you know, persecuting the Jews. And then they discovered his grandfather, something was Jewish, and he committed suicide because he was so committed to his anti-Semitic identity and his, you know, self-perception, and then it was radically transformed. He couldn't handle it, so he killed himself. So we find, so my point is like this. When was this story of the Brisbane of Bessarm communicated to the Jewish people? And I say 7 weeks later simply because in Shmos, it talks about the fact that Moshe writes the Sefer HaBris. Do you remember that? That would be in, where would it be? Is it 24/7 maybe? Yeah, in Mishpatim. That's right. The end of Mishpatim. And yeah, Vayikta, Moshe is Divrei Hashem. Vayikach Sefer HaBris, Vayikra Bozne Yom. Rashi says, what's the Sefer HaBris? Let me find it over here. Mibreshis Vad Matan Torah, says Rashi. Umitzis Shenestav Bamar. That's a Mechelta. Right? So, like, one of the oldest readings of that is that Moshe reads to them in the aftermath of the Ten Commandments. This is at the end of Mishpatim. Although there's difference of opinion before or after, but regular shot. There's the Ten Commandments, then there's Mishpatim, and then there's this incident where he says Moshe should go up the mountain going into the Arafel for 40 days and 40 nights. What does Moshe do? He, Vayikach Sefer HaBris, Vayikra Bozne Yom. What is the Sefer HaBris? This is the first part of Chumash. This is the origin of the first part of Chumash, as far as I can tell. Mibreshis HaMatan Torah, Rashi says, according to some Chazal. So what's the idea? I'm Moshe Rabbeinu. Oops. I'm going to give you a different notion of your past. I want to change your consciousness. I want to transform your self-perception. And hopefully that'll get you to stop wanting to go to Egypt and this and that and the other and follow me to Eretz Yisrael once we get the Ten Commandments and everything goes in the right direction. Now, I know it didn't happen the way. I know the story too. But this is the plan. And it's interesting that it's not communicated at the time of Pesach. That's what it should have been, you know, you'd think. But Pesach is too busy. It's too crowded. Pesach is busy with the, like I said yesterday, with an act of some kind of disassociation from idols. So first you have to get to that, and then you get to the radical transformation of the person's self-identity. I personally would have thought that you'd do it the other way around, but, you know, obviously not. And so we see something, to me, very interesting over here. When he says, V'chol Elohim Mitzrayim, Eseh Shvatim, all the rest of it, he means like in cultural sense. All the powers of Egypt, Elohim could be powers, the powers of Egypt, in imposing an Egyptian narrative upon who you are, is going to be Eseh Shvatim. But it's not going to happen right away. As we know, it won't take place for 7 weeks. So they obviously have to go through some kind of detox business, maybe, from the Egyptian stuff. I mean, physically not to be there before they can handle it. it's mashma to me that if they would have shared the story of Brisman of Saul the Resident, maybe the Jews wouldn't have accepted. It can be true. Everything we've undergone is because of some business of Avraham Avinu. Imagine, for example, if we go like the Chazal, who think that Avraham Avinu was punished with the Golis because Osan Gari would tell me the Chacham, like it says in the Zohar. Let me get this straight. My great-great-great-great-grandfather, whoever, drafted some Yeshiva guys. So I got screwed. I had me and my family all tortured to death in Egypt for that. Doesn't make any sense. Right? Well, let's put it this way. I'd be angry at God. I lost children, the person would say. I lost family. I lost limbs. Because some ancestor of mine, like I say, drafted Yeshiva guys, if you go that, you know, with that shot, which is one of the shots out there, you know, in the Gemara. You could impose it, he said, because they sold Joseph. Because my great-great-grandfather, whoever, great-great-great-grandfather, was in some plot to sell some guy named, some uncle, great-uncle named Joseph, down the river and sell him to Egypt. That's why I got punished over here? I think it was too raw. Once you leave Mitzrayim, on the other hand, and you're physically not there anymore, and you cross the Red Sea and the Egyptians get wiped out, and you're marching around the desert and you have the mon and all the other stuff, of course, these are brand new experiences, and it must have knocked everybody out mentally off their feet, because who lives in this way with Anani, a covet, and Mon, and all the other business? And once you have, by contrast to the Egyptian story, the Ten Commandments story, knows once they get to Mount Sinai, so they really are looking at things very differently. Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu in the aftermath when they're still holding by Nasa Manishma. As a matter of fact, I think that's the pasuk where it says Nasa Manishma, isn't it? In Mishpatim. Vayikach, this is 24-7, Perchav Dal Pasuk Zayim. Vayikach Sefer, Bris Vayik Rabbeinu, Vayim Rekol Asher Dibra Hashem, Nasa Manishma. Isn't it interesting? They don't say Nasa Manishma until he reads the Sefer Bris, until he reads their history. Why? That shatters all illusion. You know, knows that like takes the cataracts off the eyes. Now we understand why we had to go through Mitzrayim, the Shibud Mitzrayim. I mean, like I said before, people might have times and all the rest of it, but I have a Jewish narrative. Actually, it had nothing to do with Paro. Had nothing with anything else. Paro and Aravarus perhaps caused the time we spent in Egypt to be bad, as opposed to being good. Could have been a nice cause, if you want to go with that type of shot. But these are all speculative sorts of things. How the heck did we, who are not from Egypt, end up in Egypt and go through all this junk? I mean, why was it our fate to spend so much time in this foreign land and all the rest of it? It's because of, in other words, the answer to that, my friends, goes in who you really are. And who you really are has to do with a guy named Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov and so on and so forth. And a Bris Ben Avsarim and things like that. And now at least I have a Jewish perspective. It's very much like right now, the battles for Gaza war and all the rest of it that are being conducted by the Hamas supporters in America and elsewhere. I mean, they're trying to impose their narrative. See? According to them, Israel has no legitimacy, and they can explain it from the Arab point of view. They don't give a hoot for the Jewish point of view. And I get it. So, it's funny, by the way. They're allowed to say, we don't give a hoot for the Jewish point of view. The Jews are not allowed to say, we don't give a hoot for the Arab point of view. That's how they, you know, rigged it up. And the control of the Arab is like of super importance. There's a zillion people, Goyim and Jews, who are supporting the Arabs for this reason. There's a zillion other people, for example, the evangelical Christians, who read the Bible and based on that, accept the Jewish narrative, and they support the state of Israel now during this struggle. So, you know, the past is always, you know, what's the right word? It's always defining the present and the future. You can't escape your past. But what if I tell you your past was illusional, delusional, that you were actually under misapprehension? It's very interesting. So how does a person deal with that? I'll say it again. For whatever reason, the Ribbono Shel Olam did not reveal to the Jewish people the historical background of how they ended up in Mitzrayim and why they went through all this stuff until after they saw the revelation of Sinai. And when the people heard, Vayikra b'sefer bris, Vayikach sefer bris, Vayikra b'oznei on, Vayir m'kol shadiv Hashem nasim nishma. That's the pasuk of nasim nishma. When they heard the historical understanding of who they are and where they are and why they went through what they went through, then they can say, okay, nasim nishma. Then we'll take it on. I think that's a big yisod, in my opinion, for understanding the mental status of the Jewish people. And I think it could be that El Chol HaMitzrayim Es HaShvatim means the narrative, that's the elite narrative of Egypt, I'll bring to Mishpat, and I'll show that it's all baloney, and that the Jews entered of Egypt not because of the Egyptian zechus to conquer the Jews, and the Jews ended up in Egypt not because of the sagacity or statesmanship or heroism or cruelty of Pharaoh. He just was there. You see? For whatever reason, the Ribbono Shel Olam used them to carry out the punishment or oath that he had imposed on Abraham. But it's a Jewish story. Right? It's a very contemptuous way of looking at the Egyptian civilization, all the rest of it. Yes, it is. That's the whole point. He's trying to impose or replace the fawning acceptance of the Jewish, of the Egyptian narrative, which was a superior one and a condescending one to the Jews, but flipping it with the Jewish one, which condescends towards the Egyptians. Anyway, that's at least what I think. And it's interesting, Nasim Nishma didn't happen until later. So, anyway, I just wanted to share that idea. I'll see if I have any other idea. I don't know if we have a sponsor or not. But I want to thank Mishpacha Szymanski, as always, as they are every week. And they should have a Chakash of Sameach. I guess they're having two Siddurim over there. I don't know. All the Americans are having two Seders, right? I mean, I don't follow what somebody else is doing. But I do wish everyone, at this point, a Chakash of Sameach.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.